Golf Today.
Well, one player we hope to see back on the LPGA Tour in 2026 is 34-year-old Kim Kaufman. Kaufman played her college golf at Texas Tech. She turned pro in June of 2013 and spent her rookie season on the Epson Tour before joining the LPGA in 2014. Last year, she finished 16th on the Epson Tour points list and was set to participate in LPGA Q School in hopes of regaining status. But the week after the Tour Championship, she was diagnosed with stage 2B breast cancer. She underwent a lumpectomy and soon after began radiation and chemotherapy. Well, today we are so pleased to share that Kim Kaufman is cancer-free and is headed to the final stage of LPGA Q School in December, exactly 1 year to the day of her cancer diagnosis. And it is great to welcome Kim Kaufman to the show. It's wonderful to see you. First of all, how are you doing physically, mentally, and emotionally 1 year after learning of your diagnosis?
I'm doing great. I guess Ami asked a lot, you know, how you feel. And honestly, I feel 100%. I've been playing. I play Q School. I'm out here practicing every day in the gym. So physically, I feel great. And mentally and emotionally, honestly, I probably feel better than ever. You have such a different outlook on life, on Q School, on golf when you go through something like cancer. So honestly, coming out on the other side, I'm probably better for it.
I read a story where you said you might have had too much time to prepare for Q School this year, given everything you've been through. But I know it's a bit of a cliche, but how has golf helped over the last 12 months?
I've said that a few times. There's a lot of things I feel like are cliche, and then you go through it, and you're like, oh, maybe that wasn't so cliche, really. So it helped me from the start. Just a lot of the mental training I had done for golf, I started to apply to cancer. I started to apply, you know, we love to think all the negatives, but I'm also like, you know, but I also might go today and get good news. And there was days you did go get good news. So a lot of concepts I worked on for golf, I applied to cancer. And, you know, you meet a lot of other people that have cancer when you go through it. And I knew a few times I thought, gosh, like, I wish I could help this woman. But I was happy that I had the training I had just to help myself.
Kim, I'm curious on that note. My sister had cancer. Thankfully, she's cancer-free. She said she sometimes felt feelings of guilt. How much is that a part of the journey as well, knowing that there are so many people affected by this disease and not everyone has a positive outcome?
Yeah, I felt, you do feel guilt. You feel guilt for a couple of reasons. You know, sometimes you feel guilt because everyone just wants to help and do things. And even now, and I'm like, I'm good. Like, and you almost like, how do you thank people enough? You know, how do you say thank you? Or how do you say like, I got this? Because everyone wants to help and it's so nice, but you just don't know if you can ever return the favor. And then also, yes, you feel guilt because not everyone comes out, you know, even people that are cancer free, some people aren't doing as well. They're struggling with neuropathy or, other side effects that linger. And I've been really fortunate, honestly, to be at 100% here. So, you know, you are a community and there's a lot of strength in that, but I do know I was lucky and you do feel a little bit of guilt at that.
I can imagine there was doubt over the last year. What were your emotions like when you showed up and teed it up at second stage this year?
I told a few people because 2 years prior, I went to second stage and I looked at my husband and I said, I'm not coming back here again. Like if I don't finish top 35 at Epson to go straight to final, clearly I'm not ready. I'm not coming back here again. And then this year, obviously, that was really the only thing I could play. And I said, I should not be so excited to be at second stage, but I'm really excited to be here. So you just never say never. You know, there I was. So I felt super excited to play. And I also just felt much more relaxed in a way of like, if I don't make it, it's totally okay. I'll go to Epson next year and we'll, you know, I always say good golf takes care of everything. So I just had a very different... I don't want to say stress-free, but my nerves were less. I felt different. I handled it different. And, you know, we got through. So, obviously a good thing.
If I was ever in trouble and in a foxhole, I would want Angela Stanford with me. How would you describe your friendship with her? I know she was your cold cap person as well and really went through some tough days and nights with you.
Yeah, I mean, Angela was one of the first people I knew I wanted to tell as a close friend, but also because her mom had gone through it, and I really didn't have any experience. My mom had not gone through it. My aunt went through it, and she helped me a lot, but I wasn't living there. I didn't. If you don't live in the house with someone who's done it, you really just don't get it. So she was, I mean, from the start, the day I told her, she actually went with me to my surgeon. just because she knew, she's like, Kim, you need a second set of eyes and ears there. She did all of my chemo days. You know, those were 9-hour days, but we went into that chemo room and we had a good time. Talk about feeling guilty. Like, we would hear other people who are so sick, and I didn't have any nausea. I wasn't like physically ill. I had plenty of other symptoms, but you felt guilty for that. You know, we were in there having a pretty good time. We're like, okay, maybe we shouldn't be so loud. Maybe we shouldn't be, you know, laughing. But at the end of the day, the chemo room is actually a pretty light spot. But she was awesome. Like you say, she just, there was nothing I couldn't have asked her that she wouldn't have done. She cleared her schedule whenever I needed it. And she just got it because of her mom. She just understood. You said, you know, other people want to help and sometimes they just don't get it, which is not their fault. I hope no one gets it. It means you didn't go through it, but she did. And I couldn't have asked for a better person to be there.
Now, this feels like a bit of a pay it forward moment. You worked with the Epson Tor and Hartford Healthcare to provide free cancer screenings. How rewarding to have the opportunity to do that for you.
That was awesome. It's not something you ask someone until, you don't say, hey, like, do you go to the doctor? But now I do. I have no shame. I'll ask any woman, any friend of mine, like, are you going? If you haven't, like, make your appointment. So it just couldn't have worked out better. Like you say, we had a, you know, tournament that was sponsored by a hospital and they were all in. And I went up there and I learned that a lot of my friends had never been to the doctor. They had never had a breast exam. And we did that for anyone who wanted it. And it was really popular. It was well used. And I hope it's something that we do every year. Like you say, it's not a one and done. You need it every year. So hopefully on the Epson and on the LPGA, we can do that. And I will push that as much as I can.
Kim, a lot of players on the Epson Tour are struggling to make ends meet. They don't make the money that players do on the LPGA. How shocked were you, surprised that so many players on that tour stretched themselves to help you and to help the cause as a whole?
Yeah, you know, people don't want to talk about money, but the truth of it was, you know, I know what they make, and those are the girls that gave so much. It just tells you a lot about who they are and how they, you know, rallied around me. And it was quite similar to several years ago, my caddy broke both of her wrists. She fell down the stairs, and she was in Canada, and I did a little GoFundMe, and it was overwhelming to do that, but the people that donated most were other caddies. And it reminded me of that. I thought, huh, the ones you would think maybe have the least, but they give the most. And it's just a testament to, you know, the girls and the kind of girls that are out there. So I wouldn't have wanted to be in any other place, honestly. They were the best team, the best support. They, not even just money, but they sent me things and gifts and all throughout. Like, you know, everyone sends you things right away, and they did it, like, honestly, over 7 months. So, you know, when you're going through chemo and you get a little something in the mail, it kind of just lifts your spirits a bit. You know, everyone loves to get a little something, a little gift in the mail for a surprise. So, and they did that, and they were awesome.
Now, you were given the Heather Wilber Spirit Award this year on the Epson Tour. What did that mean to you?
It was cool. It's something we've given out to a lot of great girls, and to be on that list was fun. And, you know, sometimes it's weird. You're like, gosh, like, obviously, I went through cancer and I fought it. And sometimes it's almost a little weird to get an award for it, but then you're like, no, I do get it. Like, you do, I think it's, you know, being able to come back and play. Girls are like, gosh, I can't believe you're back here. But I think if any of those girls are in the situation, you come back so ready and so motivated that I have worked harder. I've worked harder in the gym. Like, there's a lot of silver linings in having cancer. And one of them was that I think it, like, re-motivated me and re-inspired me to come back to golf and get back to the LPGA Tour.
Kim, your story is so powerful and inspirational. I know a lot of people will be pulling for you in Alabama, final stage in December. Thank you for sharing your story and for your time today.
Thank you, guys.
Rolling along on this Wednesday, earlier this month, Monterey Peninsula Country Club in Pebble Beach played host to the U.S. Women's Mid-Amateur, and it proved to be a historic week for Ina Kim Shad.
Yeah, Rex, the 23rd hole of the match, Ina made an 18-foot birdie putt, defeating Hanley Long in what was the longest championship match in the history of the event, and with her victory became a two-time Women's Mid-Am champ. A little more about Ina. 2024 New York State Women's Amateur Champ, competed in the 2020 U.S. Women's Open, works as a mental performance coach at Fearless Golf, and yes, receives that exemption next year's U.S. Women's Open at Riviera Pacific Palisades. And Ina joins us now. Congratulations. There are special victories, and then there are victories that are meant to be. You got married in Carmel. Your husband's on the bag, celebrating a birthday that week. How would you describe how special this win was?
It was funny. I was joking with my friend before the event because we had just seen George W. Bush at the Walker Cup speaking about, you know, a month prior in Carmel. And we were talking about how cute he was with all of his gaffes over the years. So we kind of got on the internet and we were talking about how funny some of his things were. And one of the things that he said was, you know, you can fool a fool once, and he kind of like totally screws it up and laughs. You can't fool a fool twice. And basically when I got interviewed by the USGA, I think my quote was basically the same. It was like, I'm feeling all the feels and I can't describe the feels. And I mean, you know, weeks later, I still don't quite have the words to put around how special that week was with my husband, as you said, in a special place that is probably, you know, the most beautiful in the world. I'm biased. And with my parents alongside and a bunch of friends in town. So it was just wonderful.
Obviously, your work as a sports psychologist, I want to get into the mental side of this. But when you look at your week, you got better with each round, starting at stroke play qualifying all the way through the match play portion. How is that a testament to the work that you do?
Yeah, the second day of stroke play was really interesting because I felt like my swing was going a little bit sideways and I had been fighting my swing a little bit from a technical perspective. And I just knew I had to accept whatever it was and really just be an athlete. And ultimately, if I kind of conceptually could understand what was going on, I could battle it a little bit with a feel rather than kind of instruct my body too much. And so I really committed to kind of that feel as an athlete, as opposed to over-instructing my body to be technically correct and just accepting, you know, that gap in between where it's not going to be perfect and it's not going to be textbook perfect, but I know how to get it in the hole and let's just do it. So I was really proud of that and just building on that throughout the week.
On that note, as a mental performance coach, what are the challenges of maybe understanding something intellectually in helping students, clients, versus shining a light on yourself and helping yourself? That has to be a little bit tricky.
It is. You know, I was on the Fried Egg podcast about a week ago, and we talked about a moment in the final round where I just physically picked the wrong club out of my bag and hit it, and I flushed it, and I thought I was going to have a tap and birdie. It was that perfect. And I ended up being in jail like 10 yards over the green to a front pin. So, you know, I knew what I had to do, right? Textbook, I kind of understand conceptually what I need to do. And I went to the bathroom after and just like took some deep breaths and tried to detach and move on. And the next tee, I'm still clearly a little bit annoyed. So I end up snap hooking my drive. And then I'm annoyed that I'm still attached and I'm annoyed that I'm annoyed. So then, you know, there's this whole little like other play going on in the background, combating layer upon layer of emotion there. So that was pretty interesting. But again, really, really fun. And it's just such a privilege to be able to practice what I preach. Not everybody gets to do that. And so I'm just super grateful.
Now, as we mentioned, that was the longest championship match in that tournament's history. At any point during that final match, did you have to give yourself some sort of a pep talk? And if so, what did that sound like?
So honestly, I didn't really. I just felt like I was really in it. And I felt, you know, mentally that I knew it was going to be a war of attrition. So I just kept plugging along, and I was mentally and physically prepared to play 36 or more if I had to. And I was just in it. So there was no moment where I had to kind of like pull myself out and readjust or anything. I just was so in the groove of what I was doing. So it was pretty easy to keep going.
You had this big smile. Your husband's there. You seem completely locked in. Then I read that you also took like a decade or so off from competitive golf. In what ways has that helped you, given you a new perspective? Are you glad that you took that time away to kind of fall in love with the game again?
Yeah, you know, I took 11 years off, and I'm really grateful for all of the experiences I had during those 11 years that were away from golf, because I really got to do so many things that you really can't or maybe don't want to do for risk of whatever, right? Injury, et cetera. So I just got to do a lot of fun things that I had never thought about. But for sure, coming back to the game with fresh eyes, fresh perspective, that's kind of what put me on this track towards working on my own mental game, which then got me into coaching totally fortuitously. Thanks, Gio. So yeah, I mean, I'm super grateful. Nothing would be the way that it is now if I hadn't taken that time off.
Is there anything you can pull, just not from the final match, but throughout the entire week, that you can apply when you are talking with your students about this is what you do in this situation?
I mean, there's so many things, but truly, you know, one of the biggest things for me is whether it's stroke play or match play, just playing the golf course, not really worrying about your opponent or what everybody else is doing. And I really did not take on undue risk throughout the tournament. And I really felt like I played the course appropriately for my game specifically on every single hole. And I didn't get rattled if they stuck it close or, you know, had an easy birdie. I just kept plugging along and doing my own thing and playing in my own lane. And I preach that all the time. And I'm really proud of that, the discipline of being able to do that in when it matters.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share this with us. And congratulations on what was truly a special week.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Crystal Lamprecht joins us now. Congrats on being hashtag tour bound. You got messages from Ernie Els. You also went to the academy with Louis Oosthuizen in high school. What's it like having that kind of backup, that kind of, you know, pedigree really at the tip of your fingers?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. It's awesome. South African golf is such a tight-knit group. Everyone supports everyone, all the young guys coming through. So, having a guy like Ernie just growing up and sitting on a porch and listening to him talk about some stories as a five-year-old kid. And then having, like, kind of Louis being a person that, you know, I looked up to and talked a lot and played golf with quite a bit, too. So it's awesome to grow up with guys like that and role models like that. It kind of just forces you to play better and want to be better and kind of want to sit in this position and kind of live their careers.
Now, Christo, you locked up your card with some important events ahead of you on the Korn Ferry Tour. How were you able to reset and finish the season so strong?
You know, it's a little bit of freeing, right? It's kind of that, you know, that's what the target you're trying to push every single week. And if you miss a cut, you're like, gosh, I kind of missed a tournament to get to that spot. And so I think once that kind of that tour bound or that feeling of, okay, I think I've got it locked up kind of hit, I had a little bit of freeing and I was kind of playing with the house's money and kind of with the house's free tournaments, as I would say. So, it was just really freeing and it was kind of nice to keep on some good form and keep consecutive good playing and making some consecutive cuts.
Christo, I read an article where you said you had the two best weeks of your life this summer, getting engaged in the Cayman Islands. Then you go back to the Korn Ferry Tour and you win. You hole out in dramatic fashion. Do you think the first week led to the second week?
You know, it's funny. Obviously, getting engaged to my fiance, Annalisa, was nothing short of awesome. Loved every second of it. It was obviously a lifelong dream to go down on one knee and start a life with a partner you've kind of loved so much. And so outside of the game of golf, she's awesome and she's everything to me. So having that kind of week and then not touching a club and being in Cayman Islands on a beach and with my favorite person and then going to a golf tournament kind of still feeling like I'm on holiday and, you know, it all just, everything just clicked anyway. A lot of guys kind of came at me afterwards and they're like, well, maybe I need to start doing this. And a good buddy of mine, Cole Hammer, got engaged not so long ago. And I texted him. I was like, maybe this is your week too. So it was a pretty fun little rumor that went around on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Could be a trendsetter going forward on the Korn Ferry Tour. I'm impressed with that. Now, you are in Ponte Vedra right now at the Tour's global headquarters getting ready for next year. You look at what you did well, really, the last year and a half on the Korn Ferry Tour. You're first in driving distance. But is there anything specifically you want to look ahead to next year and improve on?
Yeah, I think, obviously, there's a different set of skills for both tours, right? The Korn Ferry Tour has historically been a very low-scoring kind of place. I mean, most of the guys win at 25 under par, if not lower. And where the PGA Tour obviously has some tournaments like that, but there's a lot of tournaments that are a lot more competitive, a lot more hard, and a lot more precise. Like, you just need to be more precise in general. So I think fine-tuning a lot of that kind of aspects and maybe longer irons, and I'm not going to have a wedge into every single par four and short irons into par fives like I did on the Korn Ferry Tour. So I think just sharpening up the long game a little bit more And just rewiring my game for what the PGA Tour needs is, I think, is a big priority in this offseason.
Krista, we just showed coverage of the East Lake Cup from Atlanta, Georgia. I know you're still very tight with the Georgia Tech program. I read this story that when Bruce Hepler recruited you, he actually spoke to you in your native language, and that kind of helped you bond and for you to trust him really early on. Is that a true story, that Bruce can speak your language?
I mean, not fluently, but he remembers a lot of words. I think he spent about 3 years or 4 years in these earlier years, just after he graduated college, so many moons ago. But, you know, it was awesome. It was that kind of initial meeting with him, and it was, for me, it's somewhat some place and a person that I just clicked with, and I knew right there and there that's where I was going to spend 4 years of my college career there, and I'm so grateful for the decision I made. It's an awesome place, and you know, it was 4 best years of my life for sure.
Now, Krista, we started the week talking about PGA Tour U, the pathway that the tour has created for really good college players. Michael Brennan won last weekend on the PGA Tour. You took advantage of that pathway as well. Why is that avenue so important?
You know, it just honestly just feeds the next generation of PGA Tour stars. I mean, you've seen guys like Ludvig just jump up, and now he's top 5 player in the world, kind of just soared out of nowhere. Obviously, the world didn't know him at the time, and we knew exactly how good he was. And so I think it's just giving the best of the best college players that ability to come out and give them opportunities that they previously did not had or that to fight a lot harder for. And you've just seen it pay off. And I think golf in general and most other sports are becoming younger and younger for professional athletes to break through. So I just think it's a great initiative from the tour, and I guess I'm really privileged to be in this position as well.
You know, we're two guys that cover the PGA Tour closely, love traveling the tour. Looking forward to 2026, what are you most looking forward to, whether it's a golf course or a tournament director or an 18th hole? What are you most looking forward to?
To be honest with you, I'm looking forward to everything. It's kind of been a lifelong dream to play on the PGA Tour and any golf tournament. I mean, one of my fondest memories of playing junior golf was playing the Junior Players here at Sawgrass. So maybe that's a little kind of motivation for me to get into the field and play some good golf early on and get out here at Sawgrass and the Players. But to be honest, every week out here it's going to be something for me to look forward to, and it's tournaments that I haven't played before, it's courses I haven't played before, so I'm just going to really enjoy it and enjoy all of it.
Now, we talked about your relationship with Ernie Els and Louis Oosthuizen. Has there been anyone else that's been a sounding board when it comes to taking that next step to the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I think obviously with the Georgia Tech ties, I think Stuart Sink's been a great help. You know, he moved down to Atlanta, back to his home, well, university roots that he was had. And I think, you know, spending some more time with him and him coming out of the range and he's off weeks and, you know, spending more times and any more balls around him and, you know, just talking to him on the odd occasion just about some stuff. And it was funny, I was at the Open, obviously, after leading the first round and having a really bad Friday, just scraping the cut. He kind of sat down and gave some encouraging words to me and made me feel proud of myself again and after a long day of golf. So he's been a great person and a person I have a lot of respect for and really look up to quite a bit, and on the odd occasion definitely ask for advice.
Well, you got the PGA Tour to look forward to, a wedding to look forward to. Krista, a lot of good things happening in your life. Congratulations, and thanks for the time. We'll see you soon.
Hey, guys, appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Back on Golf Today, what a weekend it was for ASU junior Fifa Laupakti at the Asia Pacific Amateur. Rallied from a 6-shot deficit to win on the third playoff hole, 20 years of age, and the first tie winner of the Asia Pacific Amateur. Oh, and with the win, he'll receive an invitation to the 2026 Masters, exemption to the 2026 Open at Royal Birkdale, and FIFA will now become the first Thai player to compete in the Masters as an amateur. He said he told ASU coach Matt Thurman he would accomplish the feat, and during his on-camera interview afterwards, looked into the camera and said, "Coach, I did it." And FIFA joins us now. Congratulations, 6-shot deficit going into the final round. You still believed you'd get the job done. What was the mindset? How did you do this?
I mean, after the third round, I had a call with my coach back in Thailand. And he was like, dude, it's golf. Anything could happen. And it's true. I mean, I saw in my junior golf career, I had an 8-shot and 10-shot comeback before. And I know it's just another day of golf. And, I just need to focus on my process, focus on my routine, stay impressed, and just go out there, play my best golf and have fun. And luckily I did pretty good on that Sunday, and it turns out pretty good.
All right, let's fix the angle a little bit on this hat. It looks like you're doing the ultimate brag right there. Let's see the hat. What do you have on? Oh yeah.
It's the Master 2026 Master cap that I got from Dubai. Yep.
Congratulations. Sticking with that final round, what were the nerves like heading into the playoff at Emirates?
Honestly, I mean, people said I didn't look nervous at all on TV, but trust me, I was extremely nervous. But I was just fake it till I make it. So just like try to sing a song with my caddy, try to go out there and have fun, try to smile, try to laugh. And, it just turns out pretty good that I control my emotion better than Taisei.
Well, you controlled your emotions. And like you said, this singing thing, you sing inside the ropes when you're nervous. I've heard you sing a little Bruno Mars, like Just the Way You Are. How did you start doing that? And if you'd like to sing for us, go right ahead.
I mean, I think it just, I don't know, it just came out of nowhere. I mean, since I came to college at ASU, we play a lot of these big college events. We play against this top amateurs, and you gotta feel a lot of pressure playing these events, because you want to win, you want to do good for your team and for yourself, and you feel a lot of pressure. And then it just out of nowhere, I just start singing. It just made me, lose and, stay in a happy mood and just play good golf and just enjoying golf. And I've been doing that, ever since.
Now, I know it's been a whirlwind couple of days and you're a little jet lagged. It's understandable. But your team is playing right now at the East Lake Cup, or just finished up playing. Have you gotten any response from either your teammates or your coaches?
Not yet, I mean, but I'm always proud of my team, no matter their scores or anything. But, I love my team. I love my coach. I love everyone. And, even though I'm not there, but I also feel like I'm there supporting them, outside the ropes. And, I always wish them all the best and can't wait for them to come back and celebrate with them.
I understand you have a lot of great friends in the game of golf, including the best player on the LPGA, Gino Titicon. How'd you meet Gino? How would you describe your friendship?
So I qualified for the Thailand national team when I was 13, and in 2018. So at that time, Gino was still in the national team. So I think we were at the national team together for two years before she turned pro. And, after that, she's been such a huge role model for me. Seeing her, her attitude on the course. I know she also loves to sing, loves to smile, loves to have fun out there on the course. And I just try to mimic her attitude, and it just helped my golf game so much.
What are your earliest memories from the Masters, and what are you looking forward to most?
I mean, I've been watching the Masters since I was, so I could remember when I was 3 years old, sitting on the couch at my old house in Thailand with my dad, watching, the Masters, and watching, I think the Masters and Tiger Woods leads me into this sport and make me fell in love with this game and want me to, work hard. It's a big motivation, and it's such an unreal opportunity for me to step on those paths and play at the Master next year, and also the Open.
FIFA, before we let you go, your name FIFA, my kids play FIFA video games. How did you get the name FIFA?
So my dad is a big soccer guy. So he was between naming me FIFA or UEFA from UEFA Champions League. So it ends up with FIFA. And then when I was born, we start to love golf more. And that's why people might not know, but my brother name is Putter.
FIFA and Putter. I love it. Your folks are fantastic. And clearly you are as well. I hope you get to sing on the Amen Corner when you get to Augusta National next year, little Bruno Mars at 12. Congratulations. We'll see you next year.
Thank you. Appreciate it.